Thanks for the invitation. So nice to come here again. Wonderful place, although it's cold compared to Southern California. Today I'm going to tell you about self-inflecting dark matter. I want to mention that we're writing a review paper on this subject. So Sean is about 1 hour away from here. All right, as we all know, dark matter exists. And the most well-studied dark matter candidate is called CDM. In the CDM paradigm, you assume dark matter particles do not, it's a bit weird, do not interact with each other on the cosmological timescale. And as you know, that the CDM works very well in explaining large-scale structure of the universe. But if we want to go into small scales, like dwarf galaxies and subhalos, even galaxy clusters. And we find that there are some issues of CDM. The first problem I wanted to talk about is so-called Corvus-Cusp problem. This is one particular galaxy. This is a dwarf galaxy called IC2574. And you can, if you look at the data, you know, one galaxy contains visible component, and like gas and a stellar component. And you can plot their contributions to the rotation curve as shown by the green curve and the yellow curve. And the blue dots are observed circular velocity. Apparently, you can see that the observed components cannot accommodate the observed circular velocity. That's the reason why you need a dark matter or you need to modify gravity, right? So if you consider a dark matter model, so then you wanted to calculate what is the dark matter contribution to the total circular velocity. And it relies on the dark matter distribution in a halo. So let's say you take a famous NFW profile, which is predicted by a body simulation of CDM, and you try to fit the rotation curve, you will get a fit like this. And let's say you fix the parameter such that you can, you know, fit the parameter, fit to the rotation curve on large radii. But in the inner region, CDM only over-predicts the total circular velocity. Well, the reason is simple, because the circular velocity is related to the total enclosed mass, right? So it means that total enclosed mass is too big in this inner region. So this is not surprising, because if you plot the density profile, the density of the function of radius, CDM halo has a cusp in the central region. Right. So now, let's say I wanted to have a very shallow density profile, as shown by this red curve. So I will explain why, how can you get here. But the fit looks like this, right? So now you see the reason why we call it a Corvus-Cusp problem, because CDM predicts a quarter density, a cuspy density profile in the central region, but the data prefers to have a quarter profile. This is a so-called Corvus-Cusp problem. This is an older problem, but with new data, you know, the issue is still there. The second problem I wanted to talk about is called the too big to fail problem. You know, by name, it's a bit confusing, so I wanted to explain a little bit in detail. So now we are talking about dwarf galaxies in the Milky Way. You know, in the Milky Way, we have a main halo, but inside the main halo, we have dwarf galaxies. This is a little guys. It is shown here. This is a small dwarf galaxies. Those galaxies, for those galaxies, you do not have a rotation curve, because those galaxies are supported by dispersion. So which means stars are moving very randomly. Okay. So in that case, you cannot measure a rotation curve. However, you can still figure out what is the total enclosed mass for a particular radius through the stellar kinematics. So here we take the half-light radius, which means at which this half-light radius is defined as the radius at which the half of light emitted, the system is emitted, you know. So if you take that, you can measure what is the total enclosed mass at the half-light radius, and you can, you know, plug in this formula to compute what is the total circular velocity, although you cannot measure it directly, but you can compute it at a half-light radius. So these dots represent the brightest observed subhalos in the Milky Way. So each galaxy has one point, because you can only measure circular velocity at a certain point, half-light radius. Now, you can see the problem, because all these pink curves are predicted biggest subhalos from CDM simulations, right? So the question is, why these observed galaxies, those are brightest galaxies, subhalos you observed, why not this galaxy are living here? Or why those curves, why not those curves are here? Why there's gap, right? So the way to think about this is that the brightest or biggest predicted subhalos are too dense to contain the observed galaxies. So that's a problem. Now you may say, well, okay, maybe these bigger guys are just there. You do not see them then. But the problem is that from galaxy formation, we know that if these bigger subhalos have a deep, very deep gravitational potential well, and they tend to attract more baryons. So the star formation rate is higher. So they should be more luminous, more visible, but you just don't see them. So in other words, these subhalos are too big to fail to form stars, but in reality, they fail if the CDM model is right, okay? So name is related to the financial crisis. Bigger banks are too big to fail, right? Too big to fall. Oh. Okay, so this issue was also observed in subhalos like Andromeda galaxies and in local groups and in field galaxies, okay? It's a very universal issue. So when people talk about small scale issues of CDM, they usually point to dwarf galaxies, low surface brightness galaxies, and the small guys. But now if you look at the galaxy clusters, you see the similar issue. So this plot shows the density profile for the 7 well-resolved galaxy clusters. Okay, let me pick up one of them to explain. So on the plot, you see 3 bands. The green bands represent the total mass density as a function of radius. The red band shows the baryon, the stellar component. Okay. The blue band shows the dark matter component. If you decompose, you observe the stellar kinematics, then you do the decomposition. And the black curve shows NFW profile. If you look at these clusters, you will find that the total mass profile is very consistent with the NFW profile. If you add the baryons and the dark matter together. However, once you do the decomposition, you will find that the dark matter density profile is always shallower than the NFW profile, okay? So another way to look at this is, again, you can plot the stellar kinematics, stellar velocity as a function of the radius, and this red boxes represent data if you use NFW profile to fit. Actually, it always overpredict the circular velocity, right?
But why wouldn't I be surprised that baryonic effects are very important here because they dominate the mass in the center part of that plot? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
you mean the feedback?
Yeah.
I'll come back. I know you will ask this.
Okay. So the general take-home message is that the CDM halos contain 2 more dark matter in the central regions than needed, okay? Now the problem you can ask is that with the problem, you can ask the question, what caused this, okay? So the point is that you want to remove some of the dark matter particles from the inner region to the outer region, okay? To reduce the total mass in the inner region. So what you can do, okay? You can ask whether the baryon physics can cause this, okay? So the idea is that the violent baryonic feedback process may remove some of the dark matter particles from the inner region. Okay, so this is how the baryon mechanism, feedback mechanism may work, okay? So let's say you have the dark matter halo, it has a gravitational potential well, because the potential well is so deep, then some baryons, you know, gas particles will fall into the potential well of baryons. It turns out at the first step, the baryons will make the potential deeper, so that actually the dark matter profile will become steeper. Okay, so this is called adiabatic contraction. All right, and because the potential well becomes deeper and the density becomes high, and in the inner region, some of the dark matter particles will have a high velocity, okay, because the potential well is deeper. So now stars can form. Okay, there's stellar formation. After stars form, and some of the stars will become supernovae. After supernova explosion happens, then some of the baryons will escape, will be heated up and escape from the potential well. Then you suddenly change your potential well. And after that, some of the dark matter particles with higher velocity cannot relax to the new potential well. They will migrate into the larger orbit. Okay, they will escape from the central region because they have a higher velocity, right? So that's the reason why the feedback effect may work. So the take-home message is that this is really a competition between the gravitational binding energy versus energy injection from supernovae. Okay, so which one is big? And also the feedback should also work if the process is very violent. If it's, you do it very adiabatically, then those dark matter particles have enough time to relax. They will stay in the potential well. The idea will not work. And also the effect should work only if the stellar density is high or the baryon density is high. Okay? So now you can run simulations to model this process. It's very interesting. So it depends on the stellar mass. Okay? So this plot shows the inner density profile. Okay? So this shows alpha as a function of the total stellar mass. All those dots are from data. You can see that minus one is NFW profile. All those observed galaxies prefers to have a shallow density profile. Okay? So if you look at this curve is from the feedback effect. Okay? So if the stellar mass is too low, the mechanism doesn't work so well. But if you increase the stellar mass, the density profile becomes shallower. But if the stellar mass is too high, the adiabatic effect will dominate, because the supernova only can blow away some amount of baryons. Okay. Overall, if your total baryon mass is too high, the effect is opposite. Okay. So you see this curve, right? The effect also depends on when it occurs. If it occurs too early, then the later mergers will erase the course created by baryons. And it also, you have seen, people have analyzed other galaxies. You have seen that the galaxies with cores larger than the radius when where the most baryons are there. Okay, so then you cannot explain the very large cores. But more importantly, the effect depends on the recipe of the hadron dynamical simulation. Okay, I'm not biased, but this is a conclusion from the NFW group, because these are people they wanted to save CDM, but they failed. So what they done is that they model the feedback effect, but their feedback effect is very mild. Okay, it's not as violent as other people do, but they claim that you can reproduce everything you observed. So this is what they get. So again, this is a galaxy I took. So this is data. All these two red curves are from the simulation have done by other group, the Governado et al.'s group. Okay, you see the effect. Okay, but this is CDM prediction with the baryonic feedback. done by the NFW group. They claim there's no effect. Okay? Then they also run the simulation with the clusters, the 7 clusters. The claim is that effect is not big enough. Okay? So it's dependent on recipe. Okay? So we are still debating about whether baryon physics works or not. Or maybe it's dark matter physics, right? Maybe dark matter particles are just self-interacting. All right. Maybe the CDM model has issues on small scales. So the idea is this. This was first proposed by Sperger and Steinherr many years ago. So the idea is that dark matter particles may strongly interact with each other. So you can ask why this will help. So to answer this question, you can look at the radial velocity at dispersion as a function of radius. Okay, so this plot shows the temperature of dark matter particle temperature, how fast the dark matter particle are moving inside of the halo, as a function of the radius. If you look at the CDM in the inner region, the velocity dispersion is very low. That's the reason why dark matter particles tend to stay together, and the density is high. But if you go to larger radii, the dispersion becomes larger and larger. So now, if you have self-interactions, those very inner and cold particles will gain kinetic energy by collisions. After they gain kinetic energy, they will migrate to the larger orbit. They will escape from the central region. That's the reason why you can reduce the dark matter density profile with self-interactions. So this plot shows the simulation from the Irvine group. Okay, so this is the density profile of a function of radius. You start with the CDM. If you increase the cross section, the density profile becomes shallower and shallower. Okay? And this plot shows the circular velocity of functional radius. You know, those are the galaxies, dwarf galaxies we have observed. And so you can see that to solve this too big to fail problem, very roughly speaking, this is the cross section you need. It's like 1 centimeter square per gram. Okay? It's a very weird unit. I'll come back to this point. So actually, you can estimate this cross section by demanding scattering happens, you know, several times per age of the universe. Okay, you'll get this number. Yes.
If you compare that to cross section for nuclear force between two protons,
yes, yeah, very close.
It's 2,200 times bigger than the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Fermi cross section.
Okay.
So it's strange that you have a particle with the strongest force in the universe, which doesn't interact with anything else.
I'll come back to this point.
This
yes.
is, I consider, bizarre.
So the thing is that the cross section is large, but doesn't mean that the coupling has to be order one. Okay, you can still have a weak scale cross, weak coupling, but to the larger cross section. I'll come back to this point. Okay. So now you will immediately see two challenges. One is that we really have to have a larger cross section. You know, as you pointed out, you know, if I convert to the unit that you are all familiar with, you know, it's a larger cross section. It's a nuclear scale cross section. For a typical WIMP, the cross section is negligible on cosmological time scale. Okay. So if this idea is right, you know, it indicates a new mass scale. Okay. The second, you have to avoid the constraint on larger scales, like clusters. The famous example is the bullet cluster. The limit is about 1 centimeter square per gram. Okay. I put the velocity here, it's important. Okay. If the cross section is a constant, then you are in trouble. Now let's think about particle physics. If you wanted to generate such a large cross section, how would you do? Okay. So just imagine that two particles interact with a force mediator, and you can estimate how large the force mediator is. So the mass is about 10 MeV issue. Okay. Good. So you need to have a light mediator. You have to have a light, you know, energy scale. But with a light force mediator, actually, dark matter scattering is velocity dependent in general. So you just imagine that you have a dark photon interact with dark force. And because the dark photon has a mass, and so in the non-relativistic limit, you can write down a Yukawa potential between dark matter particles. And so the Yukawa potential has been used in nuclear physics, in plasma physics, right? Why not apply it to dark matter physics? So it's interesting. If the momentum transfer during collision is much bigger than the mediate mass, you are in the Rutherford scattering limit. The dark photon is effectively massless, right? So you can then, in their limit, actually the cross section goes like 1/v⁴. It's very strong velocity dependence. Well, if the momentum transfer is small, it's contact interaction. That's what we need, because you see the issues on small scales, like dwarf galaxies and things. I will come back to the cluster, okay? But you'll get a contact interaction. So the cross section can be large. So it turns out that the scattering problem with the Yukawa potential is very complicated. So when we wrote the first paper, we borrowed a formula in the plasma physics literature to study this. But it turns out that if you consider scattering on cluster scale, you have to sum over very large partial wave, also those things. And because it's non-relativistic thing. So the usual like a perturbative field theory calculation will be wrong. So you have to learn like quantum mechanics again and again to deal with that. All right. So I wanted to talk about SIDM paradigm. We like the WIMP paradigm because the WIMP paradigm is very predictive. So you can search for WIMPs in different ways. I wanted to argue that for SIDM, you can also you can also have like a usual method searching for the signal. On top of that, then you can have treat the dark matter halos as particle colliders to understand the fundamental particles, fundamental physics of self-interactions. So I will not talk about the collider searches. For example, there's interesting paper written by Haipeng and Maxing is also involved on this on bounce data formation of SIDM colliders. Very interesting stuff. So I will not talk about that. Let's talk about direct and indirect detection. So the one issue with, I think the key component of SIDM, you have to have a light mediate, a 10 MeV issue, right? If this particle was stable, it will overclose the universe because you produce it in the thermal bath, then it just sits there, right? So you want it to decay, right? So it can decay to standard model particles if the particle mixed with standard model particles. And you can estimate what this mixing parameter had to be. If you wanted it to decay, let's say, before BBN, okay, to be safe, but we have to work out Maxine had to work out a paper on this, this kind of model on the BBN constraint. But let's say you set a limit on the lifetime just for a benchmark point, it will be a 10 to minus 10, the mixing parameter had to be. Right, so now you just consider a simple model, and mediator can mediate self-interactions, dark matter can annihilate to mediate, the mediator can decay to standard model, so dark matter can scatter with this mediator. So this model is, you have seen this model in the literature, just secluded the dark matter model, is proposed by Maxine and his company and other kind of contact. So you just take this simple contact, a simple model to explore the parameter space. Right? So now you say, well, okay, if the mixing parameter is 10 to minus 10, how do we detect it? It turns out, yes, you can do this. Because the mediate mass is around 10 MeV. So the smallness of the mediate mass can compensate the smallness of the mixing parameter. So this plot shows the allowed parameter space or excluded parameter space. This is the mediate mass. This is the dark matter mass. So if you are leaving this blue band, the cross-section is relevant on small scales, okay? So of course, you have additional parameter, which is a mixing parameter. And this plot shows both lux and a super CDMS constraint. Let's take a lux, okay? So the region below this purple band is excluded, okay, if the mixing parameter is about 10 to minus 10. Okay, the super CDM S bond is about one order of magnitude weaker, but it is sensitive to the low mass.
So SID. Yeah. This light, are you okay with supernova bands?
Yes, 10 to minus 10, yeah, it's about okay.
Oh, it's smack in the excluded region.
Yeah.
You have to be higher than that.
Yeah. Yes, but you can go lower. No.
You
can go lower.
I think
that's not the way it's excluded. Okay. But I thought it was in the claimed excluded region.
I think it's an excluded region. I think you have to be larger than that.
But I think 10 to minus it's above. Okay, I just say 10 to minus 10, I have benchmark point. That number can go low.
Okay, but then you start running into the BBM problems.
But those guys, the mediated mass is very light, so the bond is not as strong as we can. And I think it's certainly fine. This guy can decay after the BBM starts.
You have constraints to manage your head for that.
Yes. All right. So, but the interesting thing about this model is that if you look at the directed detection cross section, you will see the momentum transfer compared with the mediated mass, right? In the Wimper case, the momentum transfer is always smaller than the Wimper, Wimper scale mass. So you just ignore this, right? But however, in this case, you have to keep both of them. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting signal is that if you look at the signal spectrum, then you will find that for SIDN, the signal is more peaked toward the low energy report because these two numbers are comparable. So this is a contact interaction, and this is another benchmark model. If you increase the mediated mass by factor 3, and you can see the difference. So this plot, of course, doesn't include all the realistic detect effect, the resolution, all those things, but you can take all those things into account. So we wanted to see how the directed detection experiments can be sensitive to a low mass medium. So this plot shows the signal spectrum, as a function of the energy, effectively. So it turns out that you consider 100 GeV SIDN, and actually the spectrum can be mimicked by a 20 GeV WIMP. Okay. So if you just look at the lux, you cannot distinguish. However, if you go to another target, let's say germanium, because the germanium target has a different mass, you have different scattering kinematics, you can see the difference. And if you wanted to look into modulation signals, you'll find that the SIDM and the contact interaction, or the wing, will give you completely opposite phase. Okay? Of course, to go to a modulation signal would be very ideal, right? Because the modulation signal is a factor 30 to 60 suppressed compared to the average rate. So you need to have like 100, more than 100 events to see the effect. So now let's talk about indirect detection. So as I said that the mediator can decay to electrons and the neutrinos, right? Because the mediator mass is light, 10 MeV. So you would expect electrons and neutrinos. And also you can expect photons from the, let's say, galactic center. The reason is that you can do inverse competence scattering. So this is a fast moving electron. This is a low energy photon. When the low energy photon scatter with a fast moving electron, and you can get a high energy photon. So that you can estimate what is the photon energy after the collision, which is given by this boost factor, this boost factor of the electron, times the starlight energy, right? Let's say you take a starlight energy is 1 eV, then if the dark matter mass is around 20 GeV issue, then you can produce GeV photon axis if you want. Okay. So the interesting thing about this model is that, oh, by the way, so this shows the spectrum, right? So those dots represent data, and this is from, the blue curve is from the the inverse competence scattering. So the interesting thing about this model is that there's no inverse competence scattering signal from dwarf galaxies because the starlight density is small, right, negligible in dwarf galaxies. That's good, you avoid the dwarf galaxy constraint. Because the electrons, positrons are from the mediated decays, so the electron spectrum is very soft. That help this model to avoid AMS bound. If the dark matter annihilated to electron positron pairs directly, you will see this peak. You will see very, very.
Understand. You produce pi's that are boosted, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Pi electrons are soft.
Yeah, it's still soft than the.
What's your mass of X?
Mass dark matter mass is like 50 GeV.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so if you take it seriously, you know, it works, right? So all the direct detection, indirect detection signals are based on the assumption that the mediator make up to stand model sector, right? Now, what's happened is that if it doesn't couple to stand model sector, you can imagine there's some, you know, hidden sector, massless degrees of freedom that mediator can decay to, right? So in that case, there's no direct detection signal. There's no indirect detection signal. This is a nightmare scenario. So we have to look for signals or signatures which are independent of dark matter standard model interactions. So one idea is to look for halo morphology. I know it's hard, but in principle, you can do this. So it turns out with self-interactions, the dark matter halos are more spherically symmetric than CDM ones. So this plot, there are six panels from the simulation paper. You wanted to see the halo morphology. Okay, this is a two-dimensional plot. This is dark matter density contour with colors. If you look at, you know, larger scales, okay. So this is a CDM. This is a SIDM with 0.1 centimeter squared per gram. This is SIDM with 1 cm² per gram cross section. If you look at the from larger scales, they look quite similar. But if you zoom into the inner region, so you can see that for CDM halo, actually the shape is not exactly spherically symmetric. Although you take the spherically symmetric NFW profile, it turns out, you know, in reality, you know, the halo has like the distribution, dark matter distribution is not completely elliptical, spherically symmetric. But if you turn on cross sections, you know, the larger cross section, the shape is more spherically symmetric. Okay? So this is a zeroth order effect. Now, you know that in galaxies, we have baryons, right? Like in the Milky Way case, the gravitational potential well is dominated by baryons, like the Milky Way, like by bulge. And you know the distribution of stellar distribution of the bulge is not spherically symmetric. It looks like a football, right? The question you can ask is that how this would change the halo shape of SIDM halo shape, right? So you can run simulations to test this, but you know simulations are expensive, right? And also, as a particle physicist, I don't know how to run simulation. So we need to find a way to do this analytically or like semi-analytically. It turns out, yes. So you know that the self-interactions in this very inner region, the halo is kinetically thermalized because of collisions, right? Then you know that in the thermodynamics, you studied ideal gas system. If the ideal gas system reaches equilibrium, you usually use three parameters to describe it: density, temperature, and the pressure.
With a self-gravitating system, there's no equilibrium.
Yes, pseudo equilibrium. You can still achieve that.
Yes.
So it's a very important point. Sometimes you see the core collapse if I show you if you look carefully at this simulation result. Okay. So now, because if you consider this, you know, equilibrium system, you can use ideal gas equations pressure is related to temperature and the density. And if you take the gradient of the pressure, then you can relate it to the force, and to the phi is the gravitational potential. Then the gravitational potential is related to the density distribution, the matter distribution, right? It's a Poisson equation. This is a dark matter, this is a baryon. Okay, you can combine all these things together, you get a formula like this. And just imagine that you ignore this term, the dark matter part, things that, you know, if you look at the inner region of the Milky Way, then you already have gravitational, a baryon gravitational force, so you will get something like that. You can solve this equation. But before solving it, you can imagine that what is the shape of the halo. Then you can make a very stupid analogy saying, if I wanted to put a water into bottles with different shapes, the distribution of the water should follow the bottle, the shape of the bottle, right? So then you can kind of solve this equation to see the effect. So this is the density profile, again, the density contour. So this is, if you consider Milky Way barge, so this is a z direction, this is, you know, horizontal direction. You can see that if you look at the inner region, the contour is not spherically symmetric. It will actually follow the bulge distribution. So there's a correlation between the stellar distribution and the SIDM distribution. Okay? If we were able to see the correlation, that'd be great. And you can. One issue.
Okay.
One, if you go to 5 to 10,
then you start getting.
You will have core collapse instability. Very good. All right. So, of course, for most of spiral galaxies, you don't have a bulge, right? But you have a disk. You can ask the following question: the presence of the disk. How can the presence of the disk will affect SIDM distribution? This is another story to tell. So this is the NFW profile. This is the SIDM profile without baryons. There's no disk, okay? But if you add the disk, then if you model this disk by using this function, this is surface density. It's a function of exponential. So if you, you know, for a given a total disk mass, you assume the total disk mass are the same, but you value this, the size of your disk. You wanted to see the effect. So SIDM without baryons, this you have seen in simulation, it's like this. But if you have a very small disk size, which means the baryons are very concentrated, actually the SIDM density profile can be higher. Still shallower than NFW, but can be one order of magnitude higher than SIDM only simulation. But if you increase the size of the disk, okay. So baryons distribution is more diluted, okay. More spread, and the effect becomes less and less important. So what you can see is that SIDM halo could be diverse depending on the baryon concentration. Right? All right. Okay. So idea one is using halo morphology. Okay, to distinguish SIDM and CDM. Okay. So the second idea is to use dark matter halos as particle colliders. So in particle physics, you know, you have seen like a B factory, low energy collider, lab, we have L2C. But in our nature, that we have, you know, B factory, the dwarf galaxies. Typical dark matter velocity is low, 30 kilometers per second. You can go to Milky Way sized galaxies, 200 kilometers per second. You can go to clusters. It's about 1,000 kilometers per second. So you can look at the observations on all scales, try to figure out the particle physics parameters without detecting dark matter directly. Okay? But to do so, we have to consider SIDM halo model. You can run simulation, but you know the simulations are expensive. So the halo model we consider is very similar to what we discussed to look at the baryonic effect, but here's some details. Okay, so this is a dark matter density profile for the one cluster you have seen in the very beginning. So what we do is we divide the halo into two parts. Okay, so in the inner region, self-interactions, because of self-interactions, the halo reaches pseudo-equilibrium. But in the outer region, it's NFW profile. Okay, so then what determines this boundary? The boundary is called R1, where the scattering happens once. Okay. You can ask why not R2, right, where the scattering happens twice. Okay. You can argue this, but the point is that if you take that, then you calibrate with simulations. Okay. So then you'll realize that, you know, R1 is a good boundary. So you take an NFW profile on the out region. You take a pseudo kind of isothermal profile in the inner region. You just solve this equation. Then you match at R1. Okay. At R1, that you match both total mass and also the density, because self-interactions just redistribute energy, right? It will not create mass. It will not destroy mass. It will not destroy energy. It will not create energy. Just redistribute energy. Okay? So if you do that, then you can apply this simple halo model to the systems you consider. Yes?
How does a dark matter particle know to be active at the core but not outside? How does it know to do that?
Well, so what you do is you compute the scattering rate, right?
I assume.
Yeah, but you calculate it with simulations.
I agree, but you postulate this is true.
So it's just you have a higher density at the core, so collisions are more likely, and a lower density further out, so collisions are less likely. That's what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Right. So with this analytical halo model, you are able to kind of scan lots of samples. Okay. In the first analysis, we took 5 dwarf galaxies, 7 low surface brightness galaxies, so these guys are slightly bigger than dwarf galaxies, and 6 galaxy clusters. We talked about 7 clusters. We took 6 of them. And you can take the procedure to measure the cross-section as a function of velocity, right? It's a cross-section as a function of energy, right, in particle physics. So this plot shows sigma v over n. Okay. So the diagonal curves shows the cross-section. First of all, we do the calibration. You know, you took the simulated halos, then you produce the artificial rotation curves, then you use a method to rediscover what the cross-section is. So this plots those cases are shown by the gray curves, okay? So agrees with 1 cm² per gram very well, okay? So then you do the calibration.
There's something called the train red cluster, 8520. Mm-hmm. And it's claimed actually papers. But there's a large dark matter benzene peak at the center. Mm-hmm. And that requires, if you use self-interaction, for 1 or 2 cm per second.
Right. So for the able cluster, if you're going to explain this by SIDM, you cannot. The claim is that from our analysis, actually, you find that the cluster cross section had to be like 0.1.
It's still there.
No, it's still there, but what caused, you know, this kind of offset?
So, yes. So I have a question.
Yeah.
So people who play with, say, cross sections without light mediators, like baryon type dark matter that self scatters, right? So if I normalize it on, say, galaxies, so 2 cm², so it appears to be a factor of 20 larger than what you want for clusters. So can you exclude their models using clusters?
Yeah, so if you tell me the cross section is nearly constant up to cluster scale, I think the model is strongly disfavored.
But isn't it what they have for the
yeah,
for the baryon type, hadronic type?
Right, so I would assume this is the case.
But it's, the problem is for them, it's very hard to compute, right, the energy dependence. For, you know, for a neutron-neutron scattering, or neutron-proton scattering, in experiment, you do see some energy dependence. You do see some energy dependence.
Well, it's because it's in a very special place.
Yeah.
In a large scale, that's length.
Right. So if you have a cross section, you know, it's. I would say, you know, if you take the analysis, then yeah. So it's ruled out. Because the clusters, you know, the clusters just if you want to explain the course, the cross section really have to be 0.1. In other words, if you assume the cross section is 1 or 2 on a cluster scale, the core size is about 100 kpc. But the observed core size is only like 10 to 20. So we were hoping, when I started the project, I was hoping the baryonic effect will move this effect, you know, to here. But it didn't work. It turns out we have to take the fact that the cross section is 0.1. All right? So there are larger scatters, okay? You know, for two galaxies, you prefer to have a larger cross-section. And for this galaxy, you have a lower cross-section. Actually, you can explain this by the scatter in the CDM, by the scatter in the, you know, the halo mass concentration. So if you are interested in it, we can talk about this more. But the bottom line is that you prefer to have a mild velocity-dependent cross-section. For example, this is the best fit curve I reproduced here. This is a cross section as a function of velocity. It's nearly constant, but on the cluster scale, you have to go to 0.1. You have to go to 0.1. This bound is about one order of magnitude stronger than the Brittle cluster constraint. It's just because those clusters, the density profile, dark matter density profile, is it's not exactly NFW, but very close to the NFW. Okay. All right. So again, this is you have seen this before. This is wanted to show you that the one of the fit we have using this method, you can find a density profile, you know, which is consistent with this particular galaxy. Okay. So with this, you can measure dark matter mass. Okay. This is a mediator mass as a function of dark matter mass. In this example, you fix this dark fine structure constant. And the green band is for cluster. If you wanted to fit a cluster, you have to sit in on this green band. This blue band is for LSBs, low surface brightness galaxies. And the red band is for dwarf galaxies. But so the most important part, of course, is the cluster constant, right? So if you wanted to sit in everywhere, then you have to sit in this point. So this will tell you the dark matter mass is 15 GeV, the mediator mass is 15 MeV. Okay? So there's a mild dependence on this parameter, alpha x. And also, because of scattering kinematics, you actually can fix this relation. The mediator mass had to be 10 to minus 3 times the dark matter mass, okay? Because you wanted to see this, you know, this drop very precisely. Okay? So in this example, you see that using dark matter self-interaction kinematics, you can measure dark matter mass, or mediator mass, or at least, you know, this relation without detecting dark matter directly. Okay. So last thing is you can look at the dark acoustic oscillation. So if the dark matter, let's say, decay to massless degrees of freedom in the hidden sector, let's say some dark neutrinos, what this dark neutrino will do, you don't see the direct detection experiment, but the dark matter can couple to this dark neutrinos. Dark neutrinos works as a radiation, right? It will prevent the structure formation. That's how the radiation works for baryons. Right? You see the acoustic oscillation. You can the dark neutrinos can damp the scale. So this is like metapar spectrum normalized to CDM as a function of, you know, k is the momentum space parameter. So 1 over k tells you the size of the distance. So you can see that you know, this small, on a small scale, on this direction, large K means small scale, the structure is damped. So in this model, because we wrote the paper very early, and we just assume like wind per cross section, so the effect is not so significant. But if you take, let's say, asymmetric dark matter approach, saying, you know, coupling constant can be large, then you can easily shift, you know, this to the larger scale. Okay, then you know this neutrino, dark neutrino will contribute to effective degrees of freedom. This was Yan O. Tree is working on, you know, you can look at the signals on BBN and so on and so forth. Okay. All right. So I don't want to summarize, but so I just list several points here. So the point is that, you know, self-interactions could work to address the small scale issues. But I have like 5 more minutes. I wanted to talk about some things I'm working on, but I think it's more important than just simple Corvus cusp problem. It's more about the galaxies themselves, right? Actually, there are still many puzzles in galaxies. Okay. So I wanted to address those puzzles in terms of new physics beyond, you know, CDM, or maybe those puzzles do not related to dark matter directly, maybe more related to galaxy formation. So we don't know. But those are the puzzles that I'm very interested in. One is called the diversity of spiral galaxies. So I have shown you this plot saying that CDM doesn't work, right? But this is just one example. You can ask, we have observed so many galaxies. Can you find one that the CDM works? The answer is yes. Okay? For this galaxy, it's very steep rise, rotation curve. You know, this band is from CDM simulation. It works. If you have SIDM, you're going to explain this and this simultaneously, right? Otherwise, sorry.
Yes,
but they can, you know, you have a band, you know.
Okay.
In some galaxies, yes. I think we analyzed about, you know, 170 galaxies. For 20 to 30 galaxies, NFW works. For most of them, doesn't work. But to be fair enough, you have to include those galaxies in your analysis. If you have SIDM, works for this guy, can it also, the model works for this. So this is related to the fact of diversity of the spiral galaxies, right? So we need like more sample galaxies. So we believe we have some answer to these problems. It could be related to the halo concentration scatter in the CDM halo itself, because if you run simulations, you know, there's the total, you know, the concentration parameter, there's the halo and the total halo mass, there's a relation. But if you have a larger scatter, you can accommodate all of them. Okay. Maybe there's some baryonic effect I mentioned. If you have SIDM, you have get a very shallow profile. But if you add a baryons, you can increase the diversity of the halo profile. This is diversity. Another issue, puzzle, is uniformity. Okay. You might say, well, okay, galaxies are different. But if you plot the central density, you know, you use a quad profile to fit the data, then you multiply the central density by, you know, the core radius. The core radius roughly is defined, you know, where the density drops by factor 2 compared to the central density. It's nearly a constant. It's not exactly a constant, but it's very well organized.
Okay. So you're going to explain this.
You're going to explain the diversity and also going to explain the uniformity. Why galaxies are so diverse that you can also get this relation. Of course, the last puzzle is called the baryon dark matter transparency. There are many ways to saying that. So I would, you know, bring up this baryonic artificial relation. So the point is that if you take a galaxy, you plot the rotation curve, and you look at the last measured rotation curve, last measured point, it's almost a flat part. And you plot against with total baryon mass. Okay, roughly, you can get this kind of scaling. Why this is the case? Because you might think that the last measured velocity should be dominated by dark matter halo, right? But why this has to relate to the total baryon mass?
Let's put it in my hand.
Yes, you can do that, then.
But we try to understand why.
But it's not just one galaxy, right? If you look at this systematically, you know.
You also have to calibrate the definition of flatness.
The flatness, yes, but, you know. Actually, once it's flat, it doesn't matter, you know, which.
The flat values of all.
Yeah, but, you know, for most of the galaxy, once it gets flat, it doesn't change much if you extend the.
Many of them are not flat, they're going up.
Yeah, in the
inner region, going up. Well, if you, but of course, it depends on the limitation of the observation. You know, if some of the galaxies just look at the very inner region, but if you take like a gas, you know, past like a 21 centimeter line, and most of them, if you, depending on the sample you choose, but for the good samples, you know, it's, they're flat. But once you have flat region, then you know, it doesn't matter which point you pick, but doesn't change much.
I think it does pretty.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Do the calculation.
All right. So there are so many issues we have to address.
So we're working on this. Thank you very much. Yes?
There are two scenarios you haven't discussed. Mm-hmm. One is if the dark matter is not detected by the present universe, modify gravity, then you can fit galaxies and clusters and other clusters, all of it.
Modify
gravity.
You mean modify gravity?
Monsters of course. The other scenario is the paper recently by Cal Fraser and Shuttle, for instance, who claims that if you use ultra-light axioms, mass around 10 to the minus 22 electron volts, you can solve the gas problem, particularly for spheroidal book counts. Mm-hmm. That's another thing.
Yeah, no, I saw the discussion. I haven't read their papers carefully, but it's interesting, yes. So you may have a large wavelength, right? Is that right? So such that you avoid the formation of cuspids in the center of the galaxy.
If you look at the papers, mm-hmm. A modified gravity, they fit the data better than that.
You refer to Mond, right? Is that
no, Mond doesn't work like there. It's M, in the papers, M and R, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I think this question of diversity, putting it that way, is really nice. So I'm just curious if anyone has asked the question. I mean, this is pretty low number statistics when you look at 10 rotation curves. What's the probability that I fit any model I want if I pick 10 galaxies at random from an n-body simulation? And what's
right.
The false positive rate?
You mean given you refer such, to those things?
Yeah. I mean, given such low number statistics, what's the false positive rate for any theory I want?
So, here's the thing. So we analyze 170 galaxies. All right. So it turns out 20% of them have this issue. It's not just 10 galaxies, a few. About 20% of galaxies have the issues.
In the sense that so what you do is that, that's on, some ongoing work. You take the, you know, the halo concentration parameter, okay? Then you want to draw a band, what is the prediction? Let's say, you know, the central density as a function of core radius or something. So it's equivalent to this diversity issue here, very equivalent. Then you look how many galaxies are in this band. So it turns out 70 to 80% of galaxies are in the band, but the 20% are out of the band. So the band is a 2 sigma region. So you would expect you're allowed to have like 5% out of the band, but you have 20%. So this is how I've been working on like more than 1 year. I haven't published a paper. The question is how do you bring this, you know, this galaxy back into the band? You still, it's true, right? You have diversity.
I guess what I'm saying is maybe the right way to look at it is not to compare to some average band where you're averaging and find, you know, some, what is the typical, you know, average profile look like?
This one I think is from simulations.
But that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's not the right comparison. If I look at a galaxy curve and I want to ask how weird is it, maybe the right thing to do is not to compare it to some averaged band. I mean, maybe I want to know something more principled, like what's the false positive rate? Like, you know, if I draw 50 galaxies at random from a Lambda CDM simulation, what's the probability that I get a weird one?
Yeah.
And I mean, seems like it might be pretty high.
Yeah, could be right. Yeah. So they have like very small sample. Yeah. Yes. I know. I honestly agree. Yes. Yes.
So is the baryon feedback negligible for dwarf galaxies because you have a much less baryonic component?
Yes, more negligible for dwarf galaxies, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have like enough star formation, right? But of course, you can consider most complicated issue physics. For example, for the Milky Way dwarf galaxies, those galaxies are living in the main halos. The main halo has a disk, and this guy can pass through the disk. Maybe some, you know, there's some funny thing will happen because it depends on the environment. But then people look at like a field of dwarf galaxies. Those are not associated with main halos, so you wouldn't expect the environment effect should be there, but you still see the too big, too fail problem.
There's no more questions, I guess let's thank Haibo again.
All right, thank you.